Thank you, everyone, for joining us this afternoon. My name is Vijay Kumar. I'm a senior product manager in Office 365. I work on topics, serious topics like security, privacy, compliance, transparency, and a few other things. Let me start off with a small little personal story. I was leaving Barcelona. I have a four-year-old child, and anybody who knows who have kids know how four-year-olds are. They ask a bunch of questions, right? So my son was going on and on about why are you going? When are you coming back? How do I know you're coming back? He peppered me with questions. Clearly, my 10-year-old daughter, who's a hell of a lot smarter than I am, she tells him, don't worry, you trust daddy. He always does what he says. Right? That's a moment of connection for me. So it is all about trust if you think about it. Whether it's personal relationships or professional relationships. It's when we go to a doctor, we want to know where did the doctor study? What degrees do they have? What is their experience? How many years have they been treating patients? When we get on an airplane, we want to make sure it's a reputed airline. We want to trust the pilot. So it's all about trust. Even when it comes to putting your data in the cloud, trusting a cloud services provider, you want to be able to trust the cloud services provider. Of course, it gets a little bit complicated when you get to a commercial relationship like these, right? So you want to know more specifics. Okay, now tell me, I want to trust you, but I have a number of questions, just like my four-year-old son. I'm sure my customers have a bunch of questions. Why should I trust you? What do you do? What are the specifics you can give me to trust? So over the next hour or so, I want to spend time to lay out our trust narrative. What does it mean to us? How do we work to earn and maintain your trust? What do we do? How can we be more transparent with you? How can we tell you that we care for your data? Office 365 is the largest, fastest growing business for Microsoft. We want to be extremely careful with your data. We don't want to be callous about it. So what do we do to maintain your trust? That's what I'm going to share with you, and that's our trust narrative. And I wanted to lay out that personal story to make that connection, so we can understand what trust means to us in Microsoft. So let me go to the, you have to fill out the evaluation forms and everything else. So. Without further ado, I want to get into what trust means to us and how do we maintain security and compliance in Office 365. So I mentioned trust. So one of the things that we talk to customers about, I know it sounds trite, but it is customers' data that we manage. It's not just something that we take very lightly. We codify this in our contracts. We tell our customers that it is your data. You are the owner and the controller of the data. We have no confusion about it, right? We only run the service for you. We are accountable to you. And that's the basis of all of this. Like I said, Office 365 is a very important business for Microsoft, and we will be careful, very careful. In fact, more careful than each of your own organizations, because we want to maintain this trust with all of the organizations that are in Office 365, right? And through these lens, we look at the fundamental pillars of trust, just security, privacy, and compliance. We call it built-in security because we want to build security in the service for you, so you don't have to worry about, how do I make sure it is more secure? We think about privacy by design. Every feature, every functionality that we work on, we think about privacy. Does it affect customers' privacy in any way? What controls do we build in? How do we make sure the small business customers as well as the large enterprises can have controls to make sure they maintain their privacy? And continuous compliance. We call it continuous compliance because it's not about just a one time, we just do something and we show you a certificate. It's a continuous process. How do we make sure we continually maintain the compliance with not just regulations and things of that nature, but also your own internal organizational policies that you may want to implement. And underlying all of this is the transparency of service operation. Like, if we are not transparent, none of this means anything to you because it's a black box. We don't want it to be a black box. We want to show you how we do stuff, how we maintain security, privacy, and compliance. So getting it further, a double click on it. So what does this all mean, right? Whether it's security or compliance, we think about it in two dimensions. Service level capabilities. Because in this relationship, there are two parties. It's us, it's Microsoft, it's Office 365, and you, our customers. So we do a lot of things that is in our control. How do we maintain security? How do we make sure your data is not compromised? How do we make sure your privacy is not compromised and things of that nature? We do a number of things to make sure that we have it, we got it for you. On the other side, customer controls. Not all of you are the same. You all have different needs. Every organization has different needs, and we want to empower you. We want to give you the controls within your tenant, so you can go ahead and set the knobs, if you will, based on the needs of your organization. Some customers may say, I have a very high need for collaboration. I don't want to lock it down. Fine, and my security needs are a little bit lower than others. You can do so. Or you can set it up high so that you can have much more security and privacy and compliance for that matter. So for on the service level side, we do things like access control, encryption, strong authentication, things of that nature, right? On the customer control side, we give you ability to do rights management services, data loss prevention, mobile device management capabilities, and things like that. So let's get into a little bit more detail. I just threw this slide up. We made a bunch of announcements in this space. I wanted to put it in this frame. So we announced things both in service security as well as customer controls. We've done a number of features. We've made available a number of features over the last year to you in both of these areas, right? Anytime you see a new feature come up in Office, if it relates to security and compliance, it falls in these two buckets, whether it's service security or customer controls. And today we talked about, we announced encryption at rest. As you may know, we've had encryption at rest for Exchange for a while now. We make sure every server in our data center is BitLockered so that all your data at the volume level is encrypted. Today we announced something called a per-file encryption. If you haven't seen it, go to blogs.office.com and you can read the announcements, and you also have double clicks on a couple of key functionalities. And then we also announced a couple of things in trust and compliance. We are working on a regulation called or a standard called ISO 27018, which deals with PII information to make sure that we prove to you that we do take care of privacy and the customer's privacy and the user's privacy. And on the customer control side, mobile device, this is huge. We announced not just a way to manage your devices, but also manage your applications in those devices. So Julia, my general manager, showed how you can manage applications so that we don't allow you to allow users to copy sensitive information from applications and copy them to a personal application to send emails or what have you. So you can further control your environment. We also announced DLP, Office 365 and beyond. Data loss prevention, we've had it in Exchange for a while. Now we announced it for SharePoint and for Office clients as well. So I just wanted to put the announcements today in this frame. So let's talk about security. Anybody that deals with security knows that there's news coming out from everywhere. There's a breach at Target. There's a breach here. There's a lot of things that happen in this space. Syrian Electronic Army or whatever, right? There's a bunch of things happening in this space. But how do we make sense of all this? What types of threats are these? How do we protect the service against these threats? To make sense of it, we put it in three different categories. Outsider threats, these are the threats from nation state actors or some guy sitting in a garage. I mean, they may be trying to break into the service just for the fun of it, or to cause some harm. There may be insiders that may turn rogue. How do we protect against that, right? Well, then the end user himself, I mean, intentionally or not, may share sensitive information outside of the organization. How do we think about those types of threats? So we have things to deal with all of these things, right? So we have an approach called Prevent Breach, where we have make sure that the fences are up and we prevent people from getting, malicious actors from getting in. And we have Assume Breach approach, where we assume that, okay, there is going to be some vulnerability somewhere and there's going to be a breach. How do we prevent that? We'll talk about that. And then, of course, the customer controls. I'll spend some time on that as well. So first of all, service level security. So we have what we call a defense in depth approach for service security. It is not any one technique that prevents somebody from getting access to a customer data or what have you, right? It is all of these layered defense that we have, all the way from physical security, having video surveillance, having guards that are guarding our data centers, that sort of stuff, all the way to logically how we protect your data inside the environment. We'll go through each of these layers in a bit more detail in the next few slides. First of all, physical security. The slide is self-explanatory here, but basically we have perimeter security. If you've ever been to any of our data centers, you will see they're in buildings that you can't tell if there is, there are no big signs that say these are data centers or what have you. They're in these non-recognizable type of buildings, and they're highly secure. They have they have armed guards, 24-hour video surveillance, and everything else. And another important thing to mention here is there are people that work in these data centers. There are Microsoft employees that work in these data centers. They have no idea which customer's data is in what server or what bay or what, for that matter, what data center even, right? So they don't know. They don't know what service is running on it. Microsoft, as you know, has over 200 online services today, right? Including Azure, Office 365, Outlook, and this and that. So there are all these services that are running in these data centers. The physical people who have physical access have no clue what service is running on what servers or what data is on what servers. At the same time, the people that have logical access to the data, that have to troubleshoot for maintenance or what have you, they have no physical access. I can't go in and just get into a data center easily. I need to have prior authorization. I need to have multi-factor authentication. I need to have at least show two or three of different identification, including biometric and things of that nature, to get into a data center. Network security. So when it comes to network security within the data center, again, I'm talking about the service controls, things are that in our control, right? So the network, we have the concept of breach. If, God forbid, if there was a breach to one part of the network, so that network is isolated from others. It's not easy to get from there to the other parts of the network. We have router ACLs, edge router ACLs, and things of that nature to protect different network spaces. Host and the application, right? This is actually the machine and the applications that are running on it. We have patching and malware protection. Engineering folks making sure that every server in our data center is patched, it's up to date. There's malware protection in all of the services. We have the concept of whitelisted processes. I'll talk about that in a little bit more detail in an upcoming slide. We have something called a security development lifecycle. Basically, this is thinking holistically and proactively about how do we build software that is inherently secure? How do we make sure that it's not, there are no vulnerabilities in the software itself while it's being built? We have automated tooling for routine activities so that personnel don't have to log into every server to do things, to do routine things. Zero standing permissions, right? We'll talk about all of that in the next couple of slides. Let's talk about the administrators that have access to the service. What type of people are these, right? These are the people that have been through background checks. They have screening. We do screening wherever, you know, in whatever countries possible. It's legal to screen the employees, do background checks and things of that nature. We do that to make sure people that have access to the service are not are thoroughly checked, so that no questionable people are allowed to have access to the data. Account management. We manage accounts very carefully. We're obsessed about it. We make sure that people, when they leave the organization, their accounts are deleted. Even if they are within Microsoft, their accounts are automatically deleted if they no longer need access to the service. That we have concept of unique accounts, so that, you know, we're not using generic accounts. Now, again, I want you to think about all of this relative to how, you know, we used to do things in the on-prem world. You know, I mean, some of us are more sophisticated than others, but as on-prem deployments. But if you think about it, we used to have common accounts like admin accounts, root accounts, and things of that nature that are floating around. We don't have any of these kinds of things, right? We're obsessed about these things. And of course, every engineer, every developer that works on Office 365 goes through annual training. It's mandatory. They have to go through SDL training and make sure that they are following the processes properly, right? Let's talk a little bit about how these administrators access Office 365 service if they need to, right? I just generically named it just-in-time access, but we call this process as a lockbox process, right? The Microsoft engineer that has access to, first of all, let's talk about the person that has access to the service. He is background checked. There are very few of these people that are actually background checked, that we made sure these people absolutely need access to the service to either do some maintenance or troubleshooting or what have you, right? They have zero standing privileges. They can't just come in and log into the service. They have to request to this process called a lockbox with a valid reason. There is a support ticket, customer needs something, I need to have access to the service to do something. Right? They log into this, you know, then there's an approval workflow. His manager has to look at it and say, okay, this is a legitimate reason. I'll give you access to the service. Once he gives access to the service, this administrator gets temporary access to the service, to the part of the service that he needs to work on. Again, Exchange administrators don't have access to SharePoint servers or Link servers and things of that nature. We have that separation as well. So the temporary access itself is by default 4 hours. If they can't finish whatever it is that they're doing in 4 hours, they need to go back. They're kicked out of the system. They need to go back through the whole process one more time, right? And they have to request the reason and things like that. So if you think about it, the risk of somebody, some administrator in Microsoft, getting access to customer data and doing something with it is minimized very much. And I'll talk about a couple more things here. The administrator that has access to the service itself can only do limited set of things on those servers. We use AppLocker to make sure that there are only a set of 10 or 12 whitelisted processes that he can actually trigger, right? For example, he can't just fire up a browser, download some malware into those servers, and do some malicious things. Right, an Exchange administrator may be able to move some mailboxes from one server to another for load balancing or something like that, but he won't have permission to read, so he won't have permission to go into it. We call those specific actions that they do as verbs. What verbs do we give this particular role? That's how we talk about it internally. So we are very careful about all of that. Now, all of these actions, whatever these administrators do on these servers, are actually audited. They're audited. There is an audit trail that is actually every month reviewed by our executives to see how many people need access to the service. Why do so many people need access to the service? How can we minimize it? Because where we are going is we want to reduce it. If at all possible, we want to make sure that nobody ever needs to actually log into a server and do something. It should all be automated. It should all be routine activities that are automated. That's where we're going. But of course, it's a journey, and that's where we're going. So that's about all of the people that work in the, you know, whether it's in the data center or have logical access to the data. That's how we regulate that, right? Now let's talk about the the core, right? We can protect all we want, but it's the data that matters. You know, there are three things that I want to talk about here: customer data isolation, data encryption, and operational best practices. Customer data isolation. So basically, Office 365 is a multi-tenant service, as you know. We have hundreds of thousands of customers that are in Office 365. How do we make sure that, you know, one customer's data doesn't get into another customer's, right? So this is something we care about a lot. We have, you know, every tenant is separate, you know, it has its own unique organizational ID, which is a crazy 32-character long, unique ID, which is like one of the fundamental parameters for every piece of data that belongs to that customer. So every customer has this unique organizational ID. And beyond that, of course, you know, as you know, there are unique user accounts for every customer. So we fundamentally separate it at this layer to make sure that there is no data leak between one tenant to another. Encryption. So we have, you know, we have encryption in transit between our customers and the service. We make sure every piece of data that gets on the wire is encrypted with SSL and TLS. We are also working on a higher level of encryption, perfect forward secrecy, 2048-bit perfect forward secrecy. And we're also working on data center to data center encryption. So all of the data that travels between the data centers, between Office 365 data centers for replication or what have you, they travel on dedicated links. They don't travel on you know, public internet. Data at rest. I mentioned we have BitLocker. At the volume level, we make sure that all messaging data, email, archived IM conversations, all of these things are stored in BitLocker servers. So this prevents, in case one of the disks is recycled improperly, there is some data left in it that goes outside of our data center. This prevents that scenario. But of course, we also do something called degaussing to make sure all of that data is wiped out before it leaves the data center. But it also prevents a rogue admin scenario where somebody may steal a disk and take it out of the out of Office 365. We also introduced something called a per-file encryption for customer content. This goes beyond BitLocker. I'll talk about it in the next slide. So this is a really... This is a really cool technology that we implemented for all pieces of content that are stored in SharePoint Online and OneDrive for Business. So basically what we do is every file, every customer's file that is uploaded to either SharePoint or OneDrive for Business is uniquely encrypted with its own key. And we take each of these files that are encrypted with its own key and put them in a separate Azure containers in our Azure cloud, right? And we take all of those keys and encrypt it with another master key and actually store it in a separate key store. And all of these keys that I show, A, B, C, D, E here, they're all rolled every 24 hours. So if you think about it, the content that is in Content DB is actually, all of these files are taken and encrypted with their own key and stored in separate Azure containers. And all of these pieces, by the way, have different administrators. And those master keys stored in a key store, which is highly secure, even more secure than the others, and has a separate administrator there itself. So it vastly reduces any type of malicious activity that may happen. So somebody who needs to do something with this needs to have access to all of these things and needs to know where they are to be able to decrypt the content. Only system has the access to it to give you important things like search and data loss prevention and rights management, things of that nature, where we need to have a reason to be able to reason over the data to provide you high value services. Great, so that's about protecting data. So all of these things that we talked about so far are measures to prevent breach, right? To make sure something malicious does not happen. Beyond this, of course, we can never be 100% sure in our lives. We have to go beyond this to make sure, what if there is a vulnerability? What do we do about it, right? This is where we have this assume breach strategy, where we actually assume, okay, something bad is going to happen. How do we prevent it? Right? We go through war game exercises. We have two teams within Microsoft called Red Team and Blue Team that actually, the Red Team is a team of, you can think of them as white hat hackers that we have hired from across the industry, from defense, from government, from private sector. These are the people that are super smart people that come to work every day, and they're trying to break in. They try to break into the service to test it for vulnerabilities, right? That's all they do every day. They're paid to do this, and then they also do things like insider attack simulation. What if somebody inside turned rogue? How do we detect it? How do we prevent it, and things of that nature? And then there's a blue team, which actually works on trying to find any red team member that actually got in. And they go through these exercises every day, and then they compare notes and see if there are any vulnerabilities and feedback into the engineering team so that we can fix it. And we go through these things every day. And recently we announced a bug bounty program where we actually invited the industry security researchers to actually break into our service. And if you are able to find a vulnerability, we will reward you. And this is more of trying to find any more unknown unknowns that there may be. At this point, I want to play you a short video. We actually talked to these Red Team members, and let's see what they say.
We recognize that no computer system is perfectly secure. So we invest heavily in an assumed breach approach, where we prepare for emerging threats by assuming that the system's going to get compromised. A sophisticated enough attacker will find a way in with enough time and resources. So as part of our investments, we invest heavily in big data analytics and machine learning to identify and target anomalous behavior. And then we use deep forensics tools to hunt across the service, looking for potential compromises. And we also employ a dedicated team of penetration testers to find and fix security vulnerabilities.
I lead the Office 365 Red Team. You can think of us as an internal team of hackers focused on protecting Office 365. My team is composed of professionals with a variety of different backgrounds: developers, testers, network specialists, some from inside of Microsoft, some from government, others from private industry. We think and act like the adversaries that might attack our service or our customers. We analyze and probe the service for vulnerabilities. We track the latest emerging threats and trends to better simulate attack scenarios for Office 365. My team has significant freedom to be creative in our techniques, but at the same time, we have to adhere to some clear rules of engagement.
Importantly, we're careful not to place customer data at risk. We only target our own data in the service. We're careful not to impact the availability. And we're careful not to weaken any in-place security as it exists today. A typical simulated attack comprises of three major stages. The team starts with reconnaissance, probing the surface area of the service for potential vulnerabilities. Then they move into exploitation, where they try to exploit any discovered vulnerabilities and weaknesses in the service. And lastly, if they've made it through the first two, they'll try to access representative data during the data access phase to show that they can.
During reconnaissance, we try to gather as much info as we can about that service that we're targeting. So we'll look at endpoints that are serving customer data. We may target web applications and try to get malicious code running through those, either through via injection attacks like SQL injection, command injection, PowerShell injection, or other means. And when we discover a vulnerability, that's when we validate our assumed breach readiness through exploitation. So at this point, we want to get at the data, which is ultimately our goal. We're going to try to bypass any protections that might be in place. We're going to try to not get caught. We're looking for anything to help us get at that goal.
We use advanced TTPs, or tactics, techniques, and procedures, of real adversaries that we've ripped from the news and that we know from research. We'll use sophisticated command and control infrastructure, system-level persistence.
And we're a Windows shop, so you'll use well-known Windows post-exploitation techniques like pass the hash, pass the ticket, and other credential theft. So all the while, we're trying to stay forensically clean and remain undiscovered in the environment by covering our tracks wherever we can. That's one scenario that Office 365 has to face. We'll also simulate other kinds of attacks as well. This includes spear phishing against service operators, insider attacks. We'll even leverage cross-site scripting and other types of client-side attacks to properly represent what an attacker might do.
We know that the red team attacks are as real as possible. We'll be able to harden the Office 365 service in the face of real attackers. Balancing the red team is the blue team, whose job it is to detect and remediate their attacks on the service.
When the blue team detects us, then that's when the cat and mouse game really starts. We try to stealthily access data while the blue team works to defend and kick us out of the service. We treat the exercise as a real incident until the blue team figures out it is us through investigation.
Both the red and the blue teams work together with engineering to fix and harden the service. All of this effort in simulating sophisticated attacks helps us to improve our detections of malicious activity and also evolve our algorithms and response capabilities.
We know that if we continuously validate the security of the service, we can stay ahead of emerging threats.
Great. That was Chang, and Chang, who leads the who's the director of service security, who leads the red team that was talking there. And we invest heavily, and we'll continue to invest more and more to make sure our services is hardened, and we do all sorts of new techniques to make sure that prevent malicious attackers. Moving on, that was all about service security that I talked about. Everything that's in our control to make sure once the data is on the wire, it's coming to us, how do we make sure that that data is secure? Next, it's also important, it's like I mentioned, there are two parties here in this relationship, that's customers. How do we enable the customers? You own your data, you put your data in Office 365, how do we make sure that we give you enough controls to manage it responsibly, right? So we think about it in three different vectors here. Identity and access, so how do you access the service? From where are you accessing the service? How do we make sure it's secure? Devices, employees are bringing in all types of devices today to work. How do we make sure those devices are secure, right? How do we manage those devices? And thirdly, the data and the applications and the content itself. How do we give you the controls to manage them in Office 365? And I'll talk about all of these three vectors in a little bit. And I'll just do a quick, very quick demo of one of the controls to give you a taste of what it is. You may know what it is, but I'll also point to some of the announcements that we made that will put things in perspective. So I have the Office 365 admin portal here that you're probably all familiar with. So I'm going to go into one of the controls to show you just a taste of how we think about giving customers the control, right? So I'll go into data loss prevention here, which is basically there for you to ensure that your employees either inadvertently or maliciously don't share sensitive data. You may be in a pharmaceutical organization and you want to protect your formularies or sensitive data, patents and things of that nature. Financial organization, you want to prevent financial data getting out of your organization, things of that nature. So how do you prevent it? And the one that I'll pick here is we recently introduced a feature called document fingerprinting. So basically, in email, if you were to send some sensitive data over email, we could prevent, we could either block it or educate your users not to send it over, right? The same thing we extended to documents. So basically what we do in this case is you can create a fingerprint document, sensitive document, in this case a patent form maybe, and create a fingerprint of that document. So basically we don't store any of the data that is in the document itself, but we create a hash of it and store the intelligence about that particular type. And any user that tries to send any document that is similar to that document, And you can even set the confidence levels, whether it's you want 80% confidence or 90% confidence or 70% confidence that you want to block that type of sensitive data. And you want to apply data loss prevention policies of that type of document. Here I've created a template called 1040 template. I mean, in the US, this is a tax form. Say I'm a financial company that deals with people's taxes, right? Tax forms and things of that nature. So I've created a 1040 template. And I just want to show you, basically the things that you can do with this is, you can actually say, oh, I don't want my users to sending out this document. I want to block them outright. Or you can say, okay, if I do allow them to send it, then I want to rights protect all of that document, right? All of those documents. So basically, I created a template here, an email here. Basically, let me find that document. So this is I have a user, I'm sending it to vijay@contoso.com, who's outside the organization. And it's prompting me, even though the document itself is called test.doc, right? If I open that document, I'll see that it has some tax information. So basically what the data loss prevention capability did in Office 365 is looked at this document and sent it, and it looked at it and said, yes, this has meet the sensitive type. I'm going to flag it. Right. Let's look at the policy itself. So basically, on this on the admin portal, as an administrator, I can create all sorts of rules to make sure that I want to apply the type of controls that I want to. So I can apply this rule if the recipient, for example, here, I can apply this rule if the recipient is located outside the organization or an internal or a member of a certain group. I mean, look at the granularity. You can apply various different types of rules on this particular function, right? And you can actually say, apply some more rules on the sender itself. And if I look at this document, I have confidence level of 80. I can set this confidence level to anything I want. I obviously don't want to do 100% because it'll block everything that may be even close. At an 80% confidence level, I can stop the documents from coming out. And further, as I mentioned, I can actually go in and apply various actions. I can say, I can block the message. I can modify the message properties. I can modify the message security. I can say apply rights protection on this document. I can say apply TLS encryption on this document and message encryption on this document and things of that nature. So I can do all sorts of things, interesting things for my sensitive documents. I mean, from talking to customers, what we often find is they don't want to lock down everything. They don't want to lock down all the sorts of information. They care about specific pieces of information based on the industries that they're in. Those are the types of information that they want to stop, because we do want to collaborate freely without actually having to worry about too many things too many controls that there may be. Anyway, that was a little bit of a taste of how we're thinking about the controls. And we are heavily investing in this area. We have a dedicated engineering team that is building these controls, and they're trying to take all sorts of intelligence from all the groups within Microsoft to build as many controls as possible for our customers that they can use when they feel necessary. So getting back to the presentation here, I did talk about the three levels of control. Let me talk a little bit about identity and access management. Basically, we make sure that you have several identity options. My colleague Paul Andrews is talking about identity options later on this afternoon. You can go to his session to learn all about various identity options you may have. I'm a small organization. I'll go to the cloud and I'll host my identities in the cloud. Or you can say I have an on-prem directory. I want to have all my identities and credentials mastered on premises, and then I want to use the cloud as a secondary directory, right? In that case, you can choose to use federation, in which case every password, no, there's no passwords that are sent on the wire. You only send SAML tokens on the wire that have specific, authorization information, and then the time, the amount of time that that particular application has access to the data. Right? We also have secure password synchronization. If you don't want to use federation, you can use secure password synchronization, or you can have a secured password in synchronization as a fallback to your federation. Right? With secure password synchronization, when you send the passwords over the wire, it's one-way hashed. So it's not, you're not, you know, anybody is not able to, just take that password and decrypt it. And we have multi-factor authentication, basically built into the service, Azure-based multi-factor authentication. A little bit more about Federated Identity, but multi-factor authentication, you can use any phone. You can use mobile apps for Windows Phone, iOS, or Android. Or you can have, text messages, the traditional way to do it. Or you can have out-of-band calls. All of this is built into Office 365. If you have E3 subscription, this actually comes with it. You can use multi-factor authentication, whether it's purely in the cloud or with your on-prem directories. Next, device management. This is something that we made an announcement about today. We'll actually give the ability to do a full device wipe or selective device wipe of corporate data that you may have on the devices, or even have walled garden. I'll talk to you about it here. So basically, there are certain key capabilities that you need for mobile device management that are going to be built into Office 365. These are things like conditional access, so that devices that are enrolled, only those devices have access to the services. The device management itself. How do we make sure we can wipe out the device if it's lost or stolen or something like that? And then selective wipe. If an employee leaves an organization, people are bringing iPads and all sorts of tablets into the workplace. If they leave the organization, how do you just selectively wipe out the corporate managed applications and then make sure they still have their personal data? And this may be the case even when they move from one organization to another, where you don't want them to carry the data from one to another. And finally, we have advanced application management that is built with our own solution called Microsoft Intune. Basically, with this, Julia demoed today, where you can prevent copying from a corporate managed application and pasting it into personal email or Twitter or anything like that. You can prevent those sorts of scenarios with advanced application management. And the most important thing is, all of this comes with the experience that you're used to Office today, right? It is not containerized. It doesn't render it to you in some different form where you don't have the same experience as you have with Office today. Nothing like that. This is built right into Office, so you maintain the same experience. So, finally, the third vector, which is the data, right? How do we give you control to manage the data itself? We have several in Office 365. These are customer-controlled encryption features, right? And then data loss prevention that I just showed a little bit about. So encryption technologies, we have rights management service, which is, of course, 128-bit encryption, which gives the user, it's very unique, it gives the user the controls so that they can say which document is sensitive, which document they want to share with others, and what rights do they want to give others, whether to copy or to print or to paste or whatever, right? This type of encryption comes with rights management service, of course. And then you have S/MIME, which is tried and true technology that's been used for decades now in government organizations and places like that, where they can maintain their own key for sensitive documents that are sending over email. Office 365 message encryption. This is another one that we built on top of RMS, where you can actually send encrypted messages to anybody. They don't have to be within your organization. All they need to have is a Microsoft account or Microsoft Live or Hotmail or Outlook.com account. So pretty low bar. That's all they need to have for you to be able to send them an encrypted message. And finally, we have transport layer security, where you can actually apply transport layer security to message selectively to certain messages, right? All of this can be combined with your data loss prevention policy, so you can apply it selectively to your sensitive content, right? These are all the encryption technologies we have. That's my more detail. And data loss prevention, of course, it helps you identify, monitor, and protect sensitive data through deep content analysis. So let me switch to the topic here, which is compliance, right? This is the other important topic, of course, with security and privacy. I'll talk a little bit about privacy, too. What does compliance mean to customers? Of course, there are a couple of things. You may be in a regulated industry. You may be a regulated industry where you may have to follow certain regulations and things of that nature. That's why compliance is important to you. You may want Office 365 or a cloud services provider to meet certain standards to know that we actually comply with the things we say we do, right? What standards do we meet? That's important. And finally, organizational compliance. You may be an organization that is sensitive, you know, that you may have certain types of sensitive data. How do you make sure that your employees are able to, manage it responsibly? That's about organizational compliance. So even compliance, we look at it in two different pillars, service level capabilities, everything that we can do for you. We can help you to be compliant with certain regulations, certain standards, certain things, or what have you. We take care of it. And then we give you customer controls to make sure you have the controls to apply compliance. So service level compliance, right? It's very important for customers, especially European customers. When we talk to them, this is very important because they want to know what standards do you meet, what type of compliance do you have. This is a long list of compliance certifications that we have today. And this is not an exhaustive list by any stretch. This is just some of the things that we have that we thought was important. We'll bring it here. Some of the key things that I'll point out to you that are important: EU model clauses. We were the first cloud services provider that was able to sign this contract, EU model clauses, right? Another important one, recently we got Article 29 working party approval. Article 29 working party, if you're not aware, is a group of data processing authorities in Europe from all 12 European Union countries that came together and poured through our Office 365 contracts and Office 365 service and said, yes, Office 365 along with Azure and CRM Online do meet the strict privacy requirements of that we have in the EU, right? Further, so Office 365 is the only SaaS service that has ever been approved by this company. So far, we were the first, and obviously, so far we are the only ones that have got this approval. And of course, we also have SOC 2 report, and a number of these reports, like ISO 27001, which is focused on security, or SOC 2, which is focused on security and availability and things of that nature. We can make it available to our customers anytime they want, and I'm not sure how many of you directly deal with these things, or you may have conversations with either your legal department or risk department or what have you. They may ask for some of these reports and things of that nature. We share directly with our customers these reports, like ISO 27001, SOC 2, and things of that nature. The other things like Article 29 approval and things like that are public information. We have it in our Office 365 blogs or Trust Center. You can actually find it. That's about standards and certifications. But that's not the story. This is just the number of certifications that we meet. The real story is how we meet it. It's not a checkbox approach for us. And this is what we mean by continuous compliance. We don't have a checkbox approach to compliance. We don't just say, oh, there is a new regulation, let's go meet it and check it and then move on. It's a process of continuous compliance. So what we've done is we've taken all of the technologies and the best practices and features and things like that we have in Office 365. And we've created a base set of what we call controls. right? We have created a control framework. We have a base set of controls. Anybody who's dealt with a risk management or HR will understand what a control is. Basically, we have over, now we've reached a little bit over 1,000. We have over 1,000 controls in Office 365 today. If you think about a control, these are like access control. Access control may have a number of technologies and procedures underneath it. How do you prevent access from outsiders? How do you prevent access from admins? How do you prevent access from users and things of that nature? So every one of these domains have access controls. Controls. And these controls we audit, we go through audits, whether it's ISO 27001 auditor or a SOC auditor or whoever comes, they audit these controls. And then this forms a subset of some of the controls that the regulations on the right side needs. Just to give you a perspective, I said we meet over 1,000 controls. ISO 27001 may have around 170 or 180 controls. So we meet, like we far exceed the number of controls. So why is this important? Let's say there's a new standard that comes out tomorrow and says, oh, you need to meet this regulation. All we do is we translate that to the control set that we have, and then we say, okay, there is a small delta, and we go ahead and make sure we implement that. I'll give you another example. A number of these controls have password length as a requirement. Some standards say you need to be 12 characters long. Some say 15 or 16 or what have you. We take it and we go to the strongest level possible, and then that way we are able to satisfy a number of these regulations. Right? That's why. And what another thing, the cool thing that we're working on is we're trying to make all of these controls available to our customers so they can manage and assess a risk whenever they need to. A little bit about privacy. This is a very important topic. Obviously, we're in Europe. I talked about privacy by design. We don't think about privacy, again, is not an afterthought. We think about it when we build every feature. Of course, we don't do any advertising based on your service. We are in the business of providing you services that you paid for. You're not a product. We sell you services, and that's all we do, right? We don't mine your data for anything other than giving you a better service. We also try to be transparent as possible. And I mentioned we're working on making some of those controls available to you. That's a process, we're going through that process because we want to be more transparent. We tell you where your data is located. Let's say you're an Asia customer in Asia Pacific. We tell you where your data is located. We want to be transparent about these kinds of information. If you're in Europe, we tell you where your data is located. And we go to the granular levels where your Exchange data is located, where your SharePoint data is located, where your Link data is located, where your Active Directory data is located, things of that nature. And then, of course, I talked about privacy controls that we build into the features. And I'll pause on government snooping. This is a very popular topic. We all know why, all the background that about this, like why, do we allow any government snooping and things of that nature. We've been extremely transparent as we can be about this particular topic, right? We don't provide any, like we've categorically said, our chief legal counsel of Microsoft has come out categorically and said, we do not provide any government with direct or unfettered access to data. It's not like we have a pipe that goes. No, we don't do it. We don't assist any governments in breaking our encryption algorithms or anything like that. We don't share any keys with them. We don't engineer backdoors, right? We don't do any of these things. If there is some rumors and innuendo about what we do and things like that, it's false. It is not true. And I can point you to several pieces of public information that is available from Microsoft that points to this. And we're also very transparent about this. We've been very transparent about how many requests we get from governments asking for customers' data and things of that nature. We're publishing all of that. And Microsoft is also leading a consortium of other cloud services providers to actually fight against all of this, to say, privacy is important. We need to protect privacy. We're actually fighting the governments on this thing, right? That's because this is an important business for us. We want to make sure we're credible. So that's, you know, finally, I just want to share, just like we have at security, we have customer controls for compliance as well. Like we talked about data loss prevention. We also have, you know, data retention lifecycle type of controls. We have archiving built into the service. We have e-discovery, so your legal department can put, you know, whatever things on hold if they need to, things of that nature. And we also have auditing, you know. And in all of these areas, we are investing heavily, and we're continuing to try to give you more and more controls possible. And our strategy has always been we build in as much of this functionality as possible into Office 365, because security and compliance is important to our customers. And we build it into the product, so you don't have to go procure 10 different partner solutions to secure your data. That has been our strategy. In the future, we may go, we may open up some partners, but that's all, you know, that's not to the core of the service. Core of the service, when it comes to security and compliance, we want to build everything into the service. Right? So I do want you to point you to some resources, key resources that we have for Office 365 Trust story. Office 365 Trust Center, if you're not familiar with it, it's trust.office365.com. Go visit the booth and we can talk to you all about it. Here on Trust Center, we have a big commitment on Trust Center. We want to make sure we give you the information that you need to either, you know, buy Office 365, or if you already bought it, adopt Office 365 and use it in a much more confident way, right? It's trust, it's easy, trust.office365.com. And we have sections on built-in security where we have white papers, detailed white papers on our security approach, how we secure your data and things of that nature. We also have a detailed white paper on customer controls for security and compliance. We have white papers on various other things, right? Here's where we also tell you what is the reliability of a service. Recently, we went through, you know, about a year ago, we said we wanted to be more transparent with our customers. So we said we will, every quarter, no matter what our reliability numbers are, we will go ahead and announce it on the Trust Center. As you can see right at the top, it says current uptime is 99.9%. So every quarter for the last 8 or 9 quarters, we've been announcing what our quarterly uptime number is. And you can read all about in the Office 365 Trust Center. Right. Beyond this, we also have other assets. We produced a bunch of videos called From Inside the Cloud series, where these are bite-sized 4-minute to 5-minute videos, which you can quickly go through and understand what our approach is to important topics like why you should trust Office 365, is your data safe at rest, who has access to your data. There's a really good video on who has access to your data, who, our lockbox approach to access to your data and things of that nature. And the video on red team and blue team that I played is also from this series. So we're trying as much as possible to tell you that it's not a black box. This is how we manage security, compliance, and privacy, and you can come and see it for yourself, right? And that's our approach to transparency. We also have a Windows Phone app from Inside the Cloud videos. If you have a Windows Phone, you can use it. Finally, you can go to the Office 365 Technical Network. This is a Yammer network for customers. You can come in and we'll talk to you about security and privacy. We have a Yam Jam coming up talking about some of our announcements next week and the week after. Please join the conversation on Tech Network, and the URL is right there. So that's all I have for the talk today. I did want to leave good enough time for questions. And I also want to point you to some of the other deeper dive sessions that are there on various topics that we covered today. That's it. So let's have a...
Thank you.
statistics about how many? Yeah, you can. You know, if we do share certain types of information with our customers about security. As I mentioned, it's important for our customers to know what the vulnerabilities are and things of that nature. We do go through regular penetration testing. We do talk about these penetration testing reports and things like that. And we also, as I said, we also have opened up this bug bounty. So we will share some statistics about it. So feel free to get in touch with me offline, and we can talk more about it. And it's not something that we would publish it broadly, of course, but we can certainly talk to customers about it. Yes. Okay. So basically, we have security and privacy standards even for apps that are built outside of Office by third-party partners and things of that nature. We have certain requirements that they don't use the data for advertising or things of that nature, right? Even the APIs that we expose to them, we make sure that they're secure and things like that. Obviously, they won't meet all of the certifications and the requirements and all of that in Office 365, right? But because that pertains to data itself. But we are very careful about what sorts of access do those apps have, and we make sure that they abide by certain things, certain basic principles that we have for security, privacy, and compliance. Does that help answer? So. Okay. That is a good question. No, we don't. Yeah.
Could you repeat the question?
Oh, sorry. The question is, we are going big on apps in Office and in general Office 365. So how do we think about security and compliance and things of that nature when it comes to those Office? And the specific concern is, where are these apps? I mean, they're obviously not. They may not be hosted in the in our data center. So where are these apps hosted, and how do they work, and things of that nature, right? Is that correct? So, we don't have any specific requirements on where the apps themselves are hosted. They may be hosted outside of Office 365, of course. We'd prefer them to be hosted in Azure, but the data they access and the data that they're able to take out, we have much more stringent requirements about that, where they can, whether they can take out the data and store it within their apps and things of that nature. Does that help? We want to make sure that the data itself they're not able to export it out onto their own systems. Okay. Actually, if we can grab some time offline, we can talk to our apps team, and we can give you more information about it. Yes. Yeah.
You mentioned but the admin rights access for the tenants is across both. Is it not a concern for you? So someone who's a tenancy admin has admin rights across SharePoint.
Okay. So the, everything that I talked about when it came to admin access there was actually access to the servers themselves, right? So I think you're talking. So just to repeat the question for the benefit of others, so we talked about role-based access. We talked about admins having access to specific servers, Exchange or SharePoint, and things of that nature. In the tenant, if an admin is he has access to both SharePoint and Exchange, what do we do about that, or how do we think about that? I think your question is, we're working on some, role-based access, much more granular roles within Office 365. And I have my colleague here, Lawrence, who's actually working on he's a product manager for that feature, and that's good feedback to know, because we've heard it from a number of customers. How do we have just just an Exchange admin who doesn't have access to SharePoint admin. But today we don't have it. We're definitely, that is something that we're working on. And even much more granular roles within the admin itself. We can have an Uber compliance admin that only has access to the compliance capabilities and not something else. That is something that we're working on. Any other questions?
I guess in any of the other sessions, is there any coverage, I guess more kind of like in line with what she was asking about, some coverage in terms of writing secure code against the Office 365 APIs?
Okay, so the question is, are there any other sessions about apps and how secure they are, when they're built on Office 365, right?
Yeah. Not how secure they are, but I guess mostly for developers and how to ensure that.
How to ensure that it's secure. So yes, we have a number of, we have a few apps, Office app sessions actually. And I told the other lady to come, get in touch with me. My colleagues work on Office apps. This is something that they think about, and we'll have a deeper discussion with them. I can point you to, we have a number of Office app sessions. I don't have the session list, but I can share with you who those colleagues are, or I can give you their contact. We can talk to them about it. Are there any other questions? Yes. Okay. That's great feedback. Just to repeat, transparency is great. Can't say enough good things about it, but the data maps on the Trust Center itself we can do more on that front.
Yes,
yeah, the feedback is very timely. We are actually working on revamping the data centers, showing you in a much more compelling way of where your data is if you're a customer in a certain region, but also going into much more granular detail. Here's where your customer data is, here's where your directory data may reside, and things of that nature. That's great feedback, thank you. And also thanks for the compliment. Yeah. Well, if there are no further questions, I do want to point you to, there's a compliance deep dive session that I'm doing with an engineer that actually works on compliance, regulatory compliance, and things of that nature. It's a deep dive. It's an important topic in Europe. We will go deep into what does the EU model clauses mean to customers, what is safe harbor, what is Article 29, and things of that nature. It's on Thursday. I believe it's at 10:30 or something like that. Look it up. If that is the conversation that you have internally with your risk management department, things of that nature, please attend that session. I think that will be super useful. Great. If there are no further questions, I'll end it, and I'll hang out here for another 10 minutes if you want. If you want, we can talk in person.